Modern retailers need every financial advantage to compete with online and win. New retail profits can be driven by better serving the customers you already have. Let PRN show you how to capture your fair share of digital marketing dollars from the $1 trillion global marketing spend. Smart retail digital networks from PRN help you monetize the aisle and win the day. To learn more, go to PRN.com today. That's PRN.com today to unlock this new revenue stream.
I'm John Batchelor. This is the John Batchelor Show. The Endangered Species Act has been updated by the Trump administration, and to attend to this detail, and it's language detail, but it has enormous consequences for the American West, as in addition to the American people. I welcome the executive director of PERC in Bozeman, Montana, Property, Environment, and Research Center, Brian Yablonsky. Brian, a very good evening to you. Thank you very much for this. The updating is said to be by someone we both respect, James Huffman of Lewis and Clark Law School, as modest, and yet it's attracted what you'd have to say is alarming headlines here in the East. I do not expect that to be true in Montana, but what is it that the Trump administration is proposing to change about the Endangered Species Act? Good evening to you.
Good evening, and thank you for having me on. And yeah, I'm out here in lovely Bozeman, Montana. It's spectacular out here. These changes are actually, to some extent, they're tweaks, but to some extent, they can have a tremendous impact, not only for landowners who we have to rely on to do most of the conservation work here in America, but for the wildlife species that are the subject of the Endangered Species Act. And for those who don't know sort of the history of the Endangered Species Act, the Endangered Species Act was passed in 1973. And really the purpose of that act at the time was to prevent extinctions of species on one side and then to recover the species on the other side. So think of the Endangered Species Act as the trauma care unit at a hospital, just to keep the patient from dying and then to get the patient out of trauma care. And in the nearly 50-year history of the Endangered Species Act, it actually has a pretty good record at preventing extinctions, but not so good of a record at recovering species. Of the some 1,600 species that are listed under the Act, only about 1% have gone extinct, which is a good record, but less than 3% have been recovered from the Endangered Species Act or have come out of the trauma care center.
The language is important here. We have the word endangered, which sounds upsetting. We also have the word threatened. How are those used, Brian, and what is the change using those words?
Well, again, this goes back to history. This is an important distinction that you raised, John. The original law provided for two categories of species. So the endangered category, so endangered species, are species that are currently at risk of going extinct. So today that would be, for example, the blue whale or the California condor or key deer. The second category of species are threatened species, and these are species that are at risk of becoming at risk of extinction. And that particular category might include the manatee. Grizzly bears fall under the threatened species. And so when the Act was initially passed, Congress envisioned that the strictest regulation was going to be reserved for endangered species. Those were the species that were most immediate risk of extinction. And so they put in a regulation called a prohibition against take, and it was only reserved for endangered species, not for threatened species. And prohibiting take means it's a regulation that prohibits any activity that affects a member of the species or its habitat, even if that activity is beneficial. So you have this blanket, what they call take prohibition for endangered species. And so there was always this distinction at the start of endangered and threatened and how regulation was to apply. But in 1975, the Fish and Wildlife Service actually took that same blanket take prohibition and applied it to the threatened species as well. So now you essentially blurred the lines between endangered and threatened. And that had an important impact on incentives. and actually created some disincentives to recover species, because if you were an endangered species and a threatened species and treated as the same, there was really no reward for landowners and states to take a species from endangered to threatened. The strict automatic regulation would still apply. And if your species was listed as threatened, and it's the same regulation if the species became endangered, a landowner would pretty much be indifferent as to whether that species went from threatened to endangered. It would still be the same stick or regulation imposed on them.
If I read these changes correctly, one of the contentious points is climate change. Now, that doesn't seem immediately to be pressing, but how is it that it upsets the critics, climate change, and the new tweaks, as you say, of the Endangered Species Act?
Yeah, I think, you know, there is a standard under threatened species that threatened species, you have to, you know, it becomes threatened if it's in danger of going extinct in the foreseeable future. And so that's kind of where climate change, I mean, some have suggested by making tweaks to this term foreseeable future, which is essentially extending only so far into the future as the Fish and Wildlife Service can reasonably determine, that it might make it harder to list a species based on climate change. But the new rule doesn't really make it harder for agencies to rely on climate science. It makes public and binding a policy that was really governing listing decisions already under the George W. Bush administration, the Obama administration, and Trump administration.
I see. This is all nuance, Brian. That's what I'm learning.
Yeah.
You saw the
yeah.
headlines. You know, we go from CNN saying the Trump administration gutted the Endangered Species Act to others saying puts it at risk. You know, all these alarming headlines. One other version that was troubling to read about is there seems to be an upset. There's an economic consideration when moving a species to threatened or endangered. What does that mean, and what is the practical use of taking into economics of protecting a species?
Well, so interestingly, the way the law is set up today, when the Fish and Wildlife Service is actually making a determination as to whether a species is to be listed or not, it cannot take into account economic impacts of listing a species. That does not change under these rules that were proposed and finalized this week. Simply put, that going forward, the service will actually be able to disclose what economic impacts are by listing the species, but it can't use it in actually making a determination as to whether the species should be listed or not. I think what the administration believes is that probably more transparency is better here, even though economic decisions or economic impacts can't be used in the decision making. It's good for folks to know what the economic impact is of actually having a listing. So it really doesn't change the law. It doesn't change the Endangered Species Act. It just gets more information out there on what the impact of listing a species would be.
And therefore, that you can bring forth the idea that this particular protection has an economic deterrent, I mean, does economic damage. You can mention that when contesting whether a species is to be moved to threatened or endangered. You can still talk about it. Is that correct?
You can talk about it, but it can't be, the decision still has to be purely a biological decision or ecological decision.
Brian Yablonsky is the executive director of the Property, Environment, and Research Center. There's much to learn about this when we put it into practice. Right now, there's just speculation about how the language changes. So what we'll do in the course of going forward, Brian, with your permission, is that when a specific comes up, you know, a bear or a fox or my favorite, a nightingale, for example, then we'll apply these changes and see if there's any profound difference. Brian Yablonsky, the executive director of the Property, Environment, and Research Center in the beautiful and perfect Montana, in the wonderful town of Bozeman. I'm John Batchelor. This is the John Batchelor Show.